strategic maneuvers and audible command signal. Commence strategic maneuvers and audible command signal. 3, 5, 2, 4, 1. Begin. 2, 1. Begin.
Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You with your host, Rob Housechild. Movies Hate You with your host, Rob Housechild.
And there you go.
Hey,
welcome. Here we are. Where are we doing?
Where are we?
I don't know. What's up?
Oh,
that's right. It's the Movies Hate You show.
Welcome to the Movies
Hate You Show.
Okay. A little late on the singing there, Todd, just so you know.
I just didn't have my mic up all the way.
We sing the tracks.
Yeah, you started to play with the guitar already, a little too soon. take that news story off the desk. I don't want to talk about that.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Movies Hate You Show. My name is Rob. You are the man from Hunan. Ooh. Mr. Lee Peterson.
Many men smoke, but Fu Manchu.
Yeah. That's
Confucius
correct.
Confucius say.
I thought you say.
Many men smoke, but Fu Manchu.
If he's so confused, why does he always have so many interesting things to say?
That's an excellent point.
That's right.
That's an excellent point.
Now, what about Todd? Is he confused?
Todd?
I'm not confused.
I've seen
at
his
all.
Pictures. He is confused. He's walking out of the room. Confused. He's playing guitar in the other room now.
I'm right here.
You sound like you're a mile away, Sheets.
That's because of the
Todd
chair.
Sheets, our producer. I forgot to introduce you.
Remember, guys, the chair broke.
Remember the disco explosion? What was the documentary you shared with me?
Disco Demolition.
Disco Demolition. Remember that? Now, what we're going to do is we're going to have a Sheets Demolition. We're going to take all of Todd's movies into a ballpark, and we're going to blow them up in a dumpster.
Blow them up, yeah.
Why would you like that, Todd?
Oh, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
You're the one who's always putting down your own movies. We're fans of your movies.
I'm glad.
All right. Well, I forgot to say, it's the Wild Eye Radio Hour.
Wild Eye Radio
Hour. Our sponsor, Wild Eye Releasing. WildEyeReleasing.com.
You remember King Biscuit Flower Hour?
That's right.
Of course you do.
Of course I do.
You know, it took me so long listening to that to realize it was King Biscuit Flour.
Yes.
As a product.
Yes.
It's something you make with.
You thought King Biscuit was a guy.
No, I thought King, well, I didn't know.
I thought it was a guy. Maybe. When I was a kid, I thought King Biscuit was a person.
Yeah, but I thought Flower Power was flour. You know, peace and love, dude. Flower Power. I always heard it that way. I always heard it as like a hippie
King
thing.
Biscuit, Flower
Flower Power. Flower Power. Flower Hour. Flower Hour.
The King Biscuit Flower Hour.
Right, that's it. That's it. But
so
I heard
thought
flour
it was a
with
flower
an
power hour.
That's what I always thought. Isn't that crazy?
I thought King Biscuit was a person.
Could be.
You know, like, I thought the Midnight Special was a person.
Like a Zydeco?
Like, I thought Lynyrd Skynyrd was a person when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd. I thought that was a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those arguments? We used to try to get, in grammar school, we used to try to get some, hey, do you like Lynyrd Skynyrd? Yeah. Do you think he's a cool guy? Yeah. And we'd laugh at the guy because he thought Lynyrd Skynyrd was a guy and not a band.
Yeah.
Jethro Tull.
Do you think Jethro Tull's
a cool guy?
I do not.
You don't think he's a cool guy?
What's his name?
See, it won't work on you.
You can't pull that one on me.
Todd.
Yes.
Do you know that guy, Judas Priest? Do you think he's cool? You like his songs?
No.
Oh.
Here's a good one. How about Tommy Two Tone? Remember?
That's a real person.
6-7-5-3-0-9.
That's
not a guy. That was the name of the band. Tommy Two Tone. Everybody thinks
I think
guy.
I'm mixing you up with Tommy Tune. Tommy Tune is a guy.
Tommy Tune's a guy.
Tommy Tune is a guy.
He sure is.
Do you like Tommy Tune, Todd Sheets?
I wouldn't know. I'm not really sure I've heard any Tommy Toon.
Have you ever heard any Tommy Two-Tone?
Yes.
Not the hit song, but did you hear the B-side?
What was the B-side?
Well, I don't know. I'm just wondering if you heard it.
I don't remember if I've heard it.
Would you know if you heard it?
I might know if I heard it.
Could you play some?
I might be able to play some, even.
All right, if you're producing. And I'll just play some Knack while you're at it. Why don't we just go totally retro?
I saw Tommy Two Tone perform live.
How was he?
He was great, and the rest were, they were all great. They were, they have the one hit, which is a fantastic song, I think.
Yeah. That was another grammar school thing. You would give somebody that number and say.
Ah. Well, see, I was in.
You're much older than I am. You're much older than I am. But in grammar school, you'd give that number, and then there was a news story about how many people were calling that number.
Mm.
So anybody who got stuck with that number was in deep crap.
What if we call the number right now?
Why don't we try it? We have to attach an area code to it.
Oh, that's where they get you.
What's the area code in Kansas City, Todd?
666.
Really? What?
666.
What is the area code where you live, dude?
I just told you.
Come on.
Ah, it's 816.
616?
816.
816. Okay, so we're going to go 816. 867-5309. Okay, so call that number, Mr. Producer.
Lord have mercy.
And we're going to see who is it? Jenny.
Jenny should answer.
Now,
she gave me that number.
Granted, the person answering has probably heard this joke already.
But probably not in a while.
Maybe not at this exchange. Yeah. See, it's all about the exchange.
In 2013, are people making this joke?
What if it's Ray's adults only shop again?
I have to deal with that.
Reference to Mr. Ree's incredible prank phone call.
Here we go.
All right, here we go. You're on, Mr. Ree.
The number you have dialed has been disconnected or is no longer in service.
Jenny left town, guys.
Dial again.
Jenny left town?
Yeah, jeez.
Now, when I met her at the bar, I thought that, we had some chemistry, but I guess not. All right, let's be intelligent about this. Let's say a different exchange. Hmm. 7 8 6.
You know what I was?
Maybe the phone company has said, you know what, we're never going to assign that number to someone else because of that dumb song.
Yeah, maybe
try that one time.
Maybe it's like 555-1212.
Can we call that number?
We should.
What happens if you call that number?
Klondike 5.
Klondike 5.
The old movies, Klondike 5, because it would be KL, KL, K is 5.
Bensonhurst 347.
Okay, Mr. So we're going to call the California version is what you're wanting to do here.
That's what we're doing.
We suddenly started skewing to a really old audience.
Yeah, our audience just went from like, moderately hip to like, fans of the Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
It just jumped from like fans of the Pork Chop movies to fans
to Gilbert Gottfried.
To Gilbert Gottfried. Of 31086 5309. Sorry, that mailbox is full.
Of course it is.
Please try again later. Thank you for calling. Goodbye.
How did we get on this? This has nothing to do with movies. Well, this is the Movies Hate You show. We are actually. Not talking about movies.
We're not.
Well, maybe we shouldn't. No. So let's try. What would be the? So is it just? No, you need an exchange. Yeah, it wouldn't just be 555-1212.
Right.
So now that's a movie. That's a movie number.
Yeah.
So it would be 212-555-1212. How about that?
Although now I think they've designated certain numbers to use in movies because nobody falls for that 555 thing anymore. So. There are legitimate numbers in movies, but you have to choose from a list.
Well, there was a thing you remember the movie Magnolia, mm-hmm. which you're not a fan of.
I am. I'm a fan.
You are. Mm-hmm. Somebody.
I'm not a fan of the director, but that's the halfway through that movie is where we parted ways.
I see. Okay. Whatever that means. Now, in Magnolia, the Tom Cruise part. He was like a Tony Robbins kind of self-help guru mm-hmm. guy, and there was a phone number. That he was giving out on stage, or it was plastered background as he was performing.
Right.
And if you actually called the number, you got Tom Cruise giving one of these messages in character. So you would get to leave him. Yeah. So there have been little things where you know, movies have dabbled in that kind of stuff.
That's probably one of the first like viral marketing
things. Yeah, right? Phone, right?
Yeah.
Probably. What other things can you think of? Hey, maybe the listeners can think of something. And if you do, call us at 310-928-7857. We are live tonight.
We are.
Tuesday the 19th.
Right. And if you want, or you could call 310-ZATSUCKS. ZATSUKS.
Are you saying it's like a German ZATSUCKS?
ZATSUCKS.
Is meaning the show.
Meaning whatever.
Or is it ZAT the movie? We've had this conversation.
We have.
ZAT doesn't have... ZAT the movie... is ZAAT.
Yes.
Right. It's not, but our number is ZAT, sucks, SUKS.
Yes, which is the...
So you almost have, you can't just say it, you have to really spell it out for them, because it's two incorrect words.
It is. I think it's maybe the Dutch spelling of sucks.
Sucks?
Maybe.
Sucks. How's that number coming, Todd? This guy, you can't even dial a number. That's really, he's gone in the other room. Are you producing another show in another room over there?
I am not.
Dial the number I just sent you.
I'm working on it.
You know,
he's working on it. I love this.
We're on it.
Give me the board.
A few years ago when Springsteen played the halftime show of the Super Bowl, remember that?
I don't remember.
A few years ago. Well,
you're back with the Marx Brothers. Bruce Springsteen, who's that?
Springsteen, okay. Springsteen plays...
Is he Jewish?
Springsteen? No, it couldn't be.
Stein?
Show business?
Oh. Come on. Anyway. Stop messing around.
He's playing the halftime show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I thought, how funny would it be? How great would it be? If I was Springsteen, here's what I would have done. I would have come out and I would have sang 8675309. And I would have followed that with the Eddie and the Cruisers song.
All right, guys, we got it coming in here.
All right. We're calling these famous...
Press 1 to connect to your last request. Otherwise, please hold for other options.
Ooh, wait, what are our options?
I don't know.
For a business government listing, please press 1 or stay on the line. For a residence listing, please press 2.
Now, this number we're calling is 555-1212, which if you watch any TV show or movie set in New York, that's the number they're dialing on the payphones that don't exist anymore. I mean, why do they even show them dialing the number? You know what I mean? It's so fake. Why even show it? Like, why not just put the camera to where the back of the phone? Why do you have to see them actually punch in the numbers? Why would you need to see that? This is what I don't understand. The fact that it even exists.
I don't have all the answers, I'm afraid.
No, but think about it. Like, why even need that?
Well, I think it usually would come up when one character would actually say it to another character, wouldn't they? I don't remember necessarily.
Right, you're on the phone and you're like, call me back, I'm at 555-1, you know, do that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, if you were to use a real number, that person would get inundated with phone calls and they would sue you.
Right.
Right.
Which probably happened.
I'm sure it happened.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure before the 555, when did the 555 start?
I believe the 555 was actually a legitimate
exchange. That's not the exchange.
In LA.
What is that? That's
it was probably Los Angeles.
What would you call this in frack talk? What is that?
The middle part, the torso.
The middle part,
the torso of the.
That's kind of the torso number. of the centipede that is a phone number.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, if you had to dial like a country code in front of that, then is it still the torso? Yeah, see, these are the questions.
These are the questions. And if you have the answer, give us a call.
Can any of the listeners figure out that we had a guest tonight that couldn't make it and we're winging it?
We're stretching it. Not at all. But just to finish my thought, here's the thing. Had Springsteen played those two songs, which were not his songs, but everybody thought they were, then half the audience would be like, see, I told you that was Springsteen who did that song. And the other half would be like, oh, wow, it really was him, huh?
But then wouldn't Tommy Tune then sue, or Tommy Two Tone sue Springsteen for hijacking that song and claiming it as his own?
For putting him back in this public eye?
I don't know.
Probably not.
What was the other song? It was Jenny?
The Eddie and the Cruisers song. Remember the Eddie and the Cruisers?
Other Well,
Springsteen ripoffs.
Worst Springsteen ripoff. And you know, Eddie and the Cruisers, one of the worst 80s movies, and the sequel, even worse than that. I mean, there's a charm to it now if you watch it, but back then you couldn't get away from that, and that stupid John Cafferty band.
Yeah, John Cafferty and the Beaver Blues
and the Beaver,
band.
Beaver Brown and the Beaver Brown, Brown band. Yes, see how I know my
right, because Beaver Blues Band would be a stupid name.
Yeah, Beaver Brown. Come on, let's keep it cool and hip here. Naming it after yourself and your stupid name is not bad enough.
Yeah.
Well, at least, you know, Huey Lewis and the News, and he kept it really down. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was Huey Lewis and the Beaver Brown Band.
Yeah.
That wouldn't
have, what a super group.
That wouldn't have been. Yeah.
Asia.
That'd be like Asia. We just call it the News.
The News.
The News.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. But Eddie and the Cruisers, man, I mean, they're. It was so ubiquitous, man. Every time you turned on HBO, that was on.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was the afternoon, the early evening, 3 a.m, 7 a.m,
mm-hmm.
that movie was on.
Mm-hmm. It was the Beastmaster of.
It was the Beastmaster of its year. Mm-hmm. The Beastmaster was probably 2 years earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was like 82, 83, 80 and Cruisers, 85,
something like that.
Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the listeners can correct us. 310-928-7857.
Yes.
Call and prank us before we prank you.
Hey.
There you go. I like that. Todd, is anyone listening? Do you have numbers right now?
They are listening.
All right, good. What do we got? 5 or 6? How many we got? 5 or 6 thousand?
Listen to you, man.
Raise your hands.
Come on,
man. If you're listening.
Because I don't want to continue. I want to meet a quota here. And I'm not continuing. The quota's not meet, I'm not continuing. And if it's not met either. Who am I what?
Peter Steele from Typo Negative. I'm not making another album unless the fans come out and tell me that I'm great.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, that's why no one gave a damn when he died.
Okay, that's real nice. I happen to like Typo Negative.
I'm sorry.
Oh, well.
Yeah, okay.
But we digress.
All right, Enya, whatever you say.
I've got an interesting little news item. I'm like, put forward here.
Now, is this a blind news item from last week?
No.
Are you going to answer the blind news item from last week? No one wrote in.
Nobody cared, really? I'm not going
to. I actually didn't check the email. Okay. Maybe they did.
But
they can call in if they want to find out the blind news item from last week, and we'll whisper it over the air.
Yeah. No one
we can't give out the celebrity's name.
Right.
That was buying the Teeny Pissy videos.
Pissy Teeny. For the record.
The Champagne and Caviar collection. But if you call 310-928-7857, you know, every time we do this, it just sounds like we're pitching for money or something.
Yeah. We should pitch for money.
God. For money.
Yeah.
Call us and donate money.
Get your credit cards ready.
Jackalope. I tell you what, any donations that come to the show can go directly to Jackalope to help support the station. I don't want the money.
After handling fee.
We're going to handle the money.
Right. That ain't cheap.
Yeah.
So here's my story.
$72 out of $1,000 will be handling fees.
Well, you know, who's counting?
Yeah.
It makes people feel good.
Hey, if we get you $1, that's $1 you didn't have.
Right. You donate money, you feel good. It's a win-win situation.
It's a win-win for Jackalope.
Right. So here's my story.
Yes.
This is a very brief story. Sunday.
There's never a brief story with you, but go ahead.
That's the inside joke.
Yeah.
Sunday was possibly the best day in my son's life because we were in a comic book store.
Mm-hmm.
And my son Jack is a very big, you know, comic book fan.
Mm-hmm.
As I used to be. And he opened the new issue of Captain America. Issue number 4
mm-hmm.
on the newsstands right now.
Shill for Marvel.
And the letter that he wrote to them was published.
That's great.
My son is 12 years old and is published.
That's fantastic.
And it's right there. And
there it is.
How exciting was that? I mean, I never had a letter published in comic books or anything. So hats off, Jack. Good work.
And they
it's a good story.
They answer his question with a buy the next issue. Just as a quick read here. Basically, your son is calling them out and saying, if the Cap is trapped in Dimension Z, how does he exist in our dimension in all these other books?
Right.
And they're saying, well, we're going to let you know, but you have to keep buying the issues.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
This is great for him. Now, you remember, when I was a kid, I had sent in my picture and a write-in to Famous Monsters.
Ah.
But it never got in.
Yeah, me too.
Ruined my childhood, not getting in there. But now, look, your son will not have a bad childhood.
We've got faith.
He will grow up to have confidence, and he will be a productive citizen because of this.
Mm-hmm.
This is great.
Now, my daughter Casey is drafting her letter to American Girl magazine. So
really?
Oh, sure.
Oh, good,
sure.
Good. I'm going to write a letter to somebody.
Why
should
not?
I write a letter? Yeah. Letters to a Living Legend. Who's that? Who are they writing to when it says Letters to a Living Legend?
It is Pro Cap. I guess Cap is...
Oh, it's the Cap. He's the Living Legend.
Yeah.
I don't... Yeah, okay.
You know, they killed him a few years ago. This is like a reboot.
This is weird how they make comics nowadays. Yeah. Look at that. This is really weird, this cover. I mean, like, who designed that? It's like this and this clash too much, don't they?
Well, yeah, I guess...
I mean, look,
$4 a piece now.
$4 for a comic book?
For a comic book.
Even the black and white ones?
I don't know if there are. Well, I guess, yeah, Walking Dead's a black and white comic, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's popular, isn't it?
It's probably three.
Is it three?
But,
$3?
$3 to $4. Well, look at the price, isn't it? Isn't it $3.99?
For an adult, it takes like 40 seconds to read it. You know?
That's the thing.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's like, soap opera for geeks in 3 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
I just lost my taste for it. When I was a kid, I used to love that stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't know. I just lost my taste for it. Got into movies.
Yeah. Well, in my day, they were 12 cents... And then 15 cents.
Were they 12? See, I remember 20 cents and 25 cents. You are old.
No, actually, they were 15.
Did they have comics in China when you were growing up, Mr. Ray?
Oh, very good question.
Yeah, don't they read them backwards?
Sally.
From back to front?
Yes.
In China?
They call them manga.
Manga?
Manga.
Is it? Yeah? Why do they call it manga?
M-A-N-G-A? Many men smoke, but Fu Manchu.
So it's manga. It's like manga. Is there more to it? Mangash?
I don't know. If anyone knows the answer to this.
310-928-7857.
That's right.
How do you like that?
Wow, isn't that...
That's crazy.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Let's try another number.
Hmm.
Now, would the... If I was on the West Coast in a movie and I was making a phone call, would I be dialing the 555-1212, but I'd be... It'd be a different area code?
You know,
I'm sure if you were to Google this, you would find out all the information you need to know. But why would we do that?
Why would we do that when we can just talk aimlessly about it?
Talk it through for an hour.
Yeah.
And Todd fell asleep.
Oh, well.
I'm still here.
Now, I went on a... No, seriously, not to turn this whole thing on Todd, but I was on a Todd Sheets movie watching marathon, as I know you were recently. And I have to say, this guy has a sick mind. Really disturbed man.
Well, you judging by his creative output.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't say, oh, because Hitler killed all those people, he must have been crazy.
Why would you?
What they do doesn't necessarily reflect on who they are.
How the hell did I just get compared to Hitler? You crazy!
How did
bastard.
He do that?
Did I?
How did he do that? I have no idea. That's the stupidest thing I've ever.
Roll the tape back. I don't think I said that exactly.
That's right. Roll it back. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
No, just wait.
Lord
Sheets is no Hitler.
No,
but he could. There is a sadism to his films. First of all, they're much more multicultural than I expected.
Mm-hmm. Casting.
Casting-wise. It's kind of like the United Nations of horror films when these things start unspooling in front of your eyes. Would you agree with that, Todd? Have you made a conscious effort to include all races and cultures in your films?
I have always said, and I was always brought up this way, my dad brought me up to be colorblind toward people, and I really am. I don't think of... Oh man, what color is this guy? I think, hey, well, this guy fit the part, you know.
Right. So it made sense, like the Afro, jive talking, karate kicking, like blaxploitation guy had to be an African American.
Yeah, that kind of had to be that way because that was kind of based on the movies I grew up loving, as a child.
Child? What are we talking here? Black Caesar, Shaft? I mean, what are we...
Things like that. Things like all the Pam Grier, Jack Hill stuff. Of course, Dolomite. Because Dolomite is his name, and effing up Mother Effers is his game.
Dolomite's in one of your movies, isn't he?
He sure is.
Yeah.
There you go. The late Rudy Ray Moore.
What did you think of Todd's film? If you had to give them like an overall grade, you know, of what you've seen so far. Now, we're trying to get through your home filmography. Now, of course, I had watched your films back in the 90s on tape when you were making Zombie Rampage and all that crazy stuff. But then there's a whole bunch of new stuff that hasn't been released yet that you've shared with me. And that's the stuff I've been going through. So I'm familiar with your filmography. Mr. Reeves kind of new to the game. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to know what he thinks. He's playing guitar. Do you hear that? You piece of garbage.
No, that's my theme. I get my own theme whenever I...
Oh, do you?
I think so.
It's like ding, 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 ding.
That was actually the other computer, but yes, it was noise, that's for sure, but it wasn't a guitar.
Can you hit a gong every time Mr. Reed comes on?
That'd be awesome.
I don't think that'll be racist.
Nah. What? I don't even know what racist means.
They do it in Man with the Iron Fists. Mm. They do it.
Mm-hmm. That's not racist.
It's not racist.
No. What'd you guys think of that movie?
I don't think we saw
see it.
It.
I did not see it.
Huh.
Well, I did. And you know what? Like, sometimes an idea is better than the execution.
Yes.
It's kind of like... You know, the idea is so rich with it kind of makes you appreciate a Tarantino, even though he presented this, he didn't direct it or produce it. I don't believe he did. He might have produced it, but it goes to show how Tarantino is much more clever than we give him credit for in his paying homage to this kind of stuff from back in the day, but yet giving it a new twist and giving it his own story and letting it live on its own for, you know, at least 75% of it is kind of stands on its own. And it's peppered with this kind of other stuff that is taking from all his influences, where Man with the Iron Fist is like just so packed with ideas and characters that it spills over and really never leaves any kind of lasting impression. And, you know, while I respect that they got this thing made and RZA from Wu-Tang Clan directed it and so I would say stars in it. He is the Man with the Iron Fist, but he's really a kind of a secondary, kind of mysterious shadow character throughout the film. But once he does start kind of talking and fighting and stuff, it's clear that this guy has no acting background or you know, very little ability, or he didn't train enough, or something, because you know you've got Russell Crowe in the movie, and you've got these other actors who, you know, Lucy Liu and a string of popular Asian martial artists. He just really overshadowed the guy, you know. So he just doesn't have the presence of a lead. So I thought it was a mistake putting himself in the film. Although you know, hey, if you can do it, I guess somebody's handing you a bucket of money, do it. But I found it to be a real drawback. I wasn't convinced by him.
You'd think somebody would have noticed that at some point.
Well, yeah, I think we talked about this. I think it's
nailed. You know, they don't want to get.
That's the thing. I mean, you can look at it. Eli Roth co-wrote this with RZA, right? So RZA, I mean, if you know the Wu-Tang, and I'm a fan of the Wu-Tang from back when, you know, their stuff is completely, you know, just infused with Shaw Brothers classic martial arts, the stuff we grew up watching on TV and, you know, we watched here in New York on drive-in theater and Channel 5 every Saturday afternoon. And I'm sure in your market where you grew up and Todd, you all had this like martial arts theater thing every week. So they really were working from that tradition in their work to a certain extent. This is an extension of that, but you know, think about how it works. Like, you know, he RZA does a soundtrack for Tarantino. Now he's buddies with Eli Roth. They're all friends. They're like, yeah, you've got this pet project. Let's do it. They're helping him out. They don't want to tell him, dude, you suck. You're weak. You know, you're not going to pull it. We got to replace you. It's his prize, his baby. Who knows how long he's been trying to get this thing made? this could be a 20-year-old project for the guy.
True.
I just don't think for the time period, the guy wouldn't have talked like a hip-hop star during the time period, and the music kind of took me out of the movie in a way that really I didn't want it to, because I think if they'd have had the right score, that could have helped too, instead of popping in a damn rap song every 3 minutes. It kind of couldn't even concentrate on the dialogue or the action because you're so busy being annoyed by the soundtrack.
Well, that's the thing. You know, my opinion is that it's a insulated world that we're getting a glimpse of here. So you're seeing like friends getting. It's like, look, if the three of us said, "Let's make this, let's make this crazy movie," and we just go and do it, and we don't get any outside opinion, and we're just caught up in our own in jokes and that kind of stuff, and it just comes out, and you know that it's, you know, if you insulate yourself and think you're that good without really having it tested. And of course, we don't know the story behind this movie. Who knows? It could have been worse. Maybe somebody saved it in editing. Maybe, you know, the first, cut was terrible. But whatever. I'm just saying, when you take people who are isolated and put them together and they kind of come up with this, you could see, Roth, Tarantino, RZA, you could see all the, everything is packed in there. I mean, everything you've seen in every movie at some point is in there. From A Kid with the Golden Arm to, Dragon versus Needles of Death, Crippled Masters, 18 Bronze Men, everything's in there. Everything's in there. And then even Western crossover stuff and really insane, Joffrey Ho type stuff. I mean, it just goes all over the place, man. But it really does capture. There's a great thing at the end of the film where the characters each have their own moment in front of the camera doing some martial arts, and they really nailed that kind of washed out, stretched pan and scan feeling of the opening credits of these movies back in the day when you're watching them on TV or even on bootleg tape. They really nailed that. I wish they had done the whole movie in that kind of soft tone thing, but we know how that worked for Grindhouse, so I understand why they didn't. They had to deliver it to somebody and sell it. Mm-hmm. So,
what do you mean the way you think it wasn't successful in Grindhouse? Or?
I don't know. Oh, in the movie Grindhouse? Yeah. I just don't. No, I don't. I think it looked. I think, you know what? I think Rodriguez's half of Grindhouse is pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. And he pretty much nails it.
Yeah.
There's something forced about the missing scenes, that stuff, mm-hmm. like having the missing scenes.
Especially when it happens in both.
It happens in both. Now, listen, I went to Grindhouses as a kid on 42nd Street. That never happened in a movie. I never saw that happen in a movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it did happen in hundreds of movies, but it just never happened to me. So to me, it felt forced. It felt like something you would think would happen back then, but it probably didn't happen as much as you think it would have. Now, were there some tattered prints and crappy prints and the drunk projectionist, had a blurry moment, hit the camera, hit the projector and it was blurry? Yes, but I didn't see stuff like that.
It was also the same punchline in both, because it was a sex scene was coming on. So,
which I found bizarre for a film of such, with such money behind it, to actually skimp on the sex. Now, I don't know, DVD, if the DVD had those scenes cut back in. I don't know. I have no idea.
They do.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, for foreign markets and stuff, you would want to add this nudity. That's part of the selling point.
Well, actually, no. The Rodriguez one wasn't shot. That's the gag was the scene's missing. The lovemaking scene doesn't exist. But in the Tarantino one, in Death Proof, it's the lap dance that she does, and that is included.
It is.
That is included.
Okay.
And it's silly. It should have been included because it's a good scene.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, part of the titillation of a Grindhouse film was having the sex in it, not cut out of it. So I thought that was kind of a fail.
I got the feeling that maybe Quentin saw what Rodriguez was doing and said, "Ooh, I'll do that too." And then cut out
the scene. Like you said, it's just not funny because it didn't happen in every film we went to see, mm-hmm. although it might have happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were more instances of fights in a theater after a martial arts movie, everybody wanted to fight outside. So there were all that kind of stuff was going on all the time. Mm-hmm. I would say 90% of the time. There was always some kind of ruckus or kind of nastiness, but that wasn't in the movie. And the movies were just, they were just spooling out, man. It was really not that. And they weren't necessarily that beat up.
Right.
They were so over the top, so tattered of a print.
Well, the death proof, the beginning, like the first reel is tattered.
Right.
And then it kind of clears up.
Yeah.
And I think...
That happened,
but I think what they should have done, maybe they did this and I'm just forgetting, but the damage should have been around the reel changes.
Yeah.
Would have been
that's where it would have been. Right, yeah. Right. And you were, as a former projectionist, you know this, that, you know, for a film to be that beat up, it would have to be something that had already had a first and second, maybe a third run, and this was just kind of something thrown on the bottom of a double bill.
Right.
Because what would happen was, you know, you get your first run films, let's say you go to 42nd Street, 1981, you go and see a movie, you know, whatever comes out that Empire Strikes Back is playing, and then they throw, you know, Alice Sweet Alice on the double bill. They throw on, and Alice Sweet Alice had played for 2 years already, let's say, and that was sitting up in their loft, and they just, you know, they just kept recycling this stuff, you know, as it went, and there was like a, you know, place down the street they went and they got these prints, they rented it from and then brought them over. You know, Hollywood wasn't sending these prints, right? You know, they were getting it from a print house,
right?
You know, from a movie service. So it was like kind of like whatever was available. So that's why you'd get, you know, Galaxy of Terror, and then you get like a Chuck Norris movie as the, you know, co-feature, because there was no rhyme or reason to it. It's not like today we think like, oh, this horror movie and that horror movie would be a great double bill. It never worked like that.
Right.
You know, you go see Embryo with Rock Hudson and then a karate movie after it. You know, that's the way it worked.
And the serendipity of it kind of made, or that's not the right word, but the juxtaposition of two completely disparate movies made a serendipity.
It made a serendipity, and that's the thing a lot of people don't understand about or forget. Well, a lot of people may be too young to even remember about Grindhouse, is that it wasn't about back-to-back horror movies. But they might have a horror show, and they might have three or four horror movies in a row, or they might team up horror movies. But think about it, like, they wanted as wide an audience as they could, so they would have a karate movie with a horror movie. They get both audiences in there. They had two karate movies, and they're cutting out all the horror audience.
Right.
And the ticket sales.
Right.
So they would do that. Or you get, you know, a trucker movie, and then you get a horror picture.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that stuff is great.
Exactly.
And that's what got then, and that's why I love, you know, so many guys are, you know, the horror experts, like these Todd Sheets kind of guys, you know, they're, you know, all about Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Cannibal Holocaust, you know, but they're not about like the co hits, man. You know, the little.
No, that's not true. You can't really call me out on that because I am a walking exploitation movie freak. So come on now, you know better. I know Truck Stop Women just as much as I do Herschel Gordon Lewis.
To me, it's like, you know, the best double bills, like Texas Chainsaw and Bad News Bears Go to Japan. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to watch those two movies together.
Mm-hmm.
I want my emotions to be brought into comedy, and then to terror, and then back to comedy, and then whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I want the full gamut of entertainment.
Now, I grew up, as did Todd, in the Midwest, and so we didn't have grindhouses, but we had drive-ins.
Right. Same thing.
Drive-ins, you'd have a double feature, and usually the first... it would be one first run movie and one second run movie,
right?
Not necessarily connected. Usually, the rating was basically the only connection.
Yeah.
You know, they were R rated or they were G rated. But yeah, I mean, I remember seeing when I was a little kid, and I'm sure I fell asleep during this. But
what'd you see, Citizen Kane?
No, I remember seeing King Kong Escapes.
Oh.
On a double bill with a Dean Martin Western.
Yeah,
I don't remember which one it was, but I remember that. And I didn't think at the time, why are they putting these two movies together?
Never.
These are the movies we're going to see.
That's the movies.
Yeah.
And that's great. And I don't know where the, you know, and I think that's where like the psychotronic comes in. And that's why you and I, and even, you know, somebody, Michael Weldon's probably much older than us, but that's where the psychotronic comes in. It's like, yeah, that Dean Martin Western psychotronic.
Right.
It's not about genre. You know,
right.
It's about how does it fit into the whole scope of film? Is it psychotronic or not?
Right.
You know, but like a B Western with Dean Martin, or like, you know, the Dean Martin Matt Helm movies, those are psychotronic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've
talked. I was just kidding you before. I don't want you to get mad at me. I was just busting you, man.
I'm not mad.
I know you know your stuff, dude. You're an encyclopedia. I don't want to give our listeners the wrong impression. What are we at? 310-928-7857. No one's called yet tonight. Now, last week we had a turned down call.
We did. We had so many calls.
And we had somebody calling in questioning whether or not you were really Asian last week.
Yes, well, you know, some people can see right through the...
See right through the mic.
Mic, yeah. But,
they don't see that bowl of soup you're slurping
out. You know, the Tarantino thing reminded me that yesterday I read Ennio Morricone is calling out Tarantino.
Is he?
And it's funny because I think, I'm not sure if we talked about this on air, but he said basically what I said, to pat myself on the back, that he said I'll never work with Tarantino again was the headline. Okay. But what he was saying basically was that Tarantino, the way he uses his music is I forget exactly the word he used, but it there's no cohesion to the music. And what I said before was that if Tarantino's soundtracks feel like they're temp tracks, which is fine. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you know, you cut this scene to the cat people theme. But then once you do that, then you give that to somebody and you say, write some music that sounds kind of like this or that gives the same mood or whatever. That's what it should be doing. Don't play the cat people theme because it takes you out of the movie. So Morricone apparently originally was... Tarantino approached him to do a soundtrack to Django Unchained, mm-hmm. and for whatever reason, didn't completely work out. But he just took one or a couple of his tracks from other movies and put them in the movie. And Morricone was horrified because it's like I didn't write this for this scene. I wrote it for this scene.
This is a purist kind of approach. And you and Morricone are kind of the same age, so I can see that. You know, I've always defended Tarantino in that respect. But I like the mashup, and you know, I like a different take on stuff. I like that somebody can take all this stuff that we grew up on and not just be a fanboy kind of, you know, masturbating with it. He's making his own universe out of it, and he's doing his own original content with it.
I think he's not. I think the music is the one place where he's not. That's the exception, because
the music's incidental. I mean, it's no pun intended. I mean, it's not no one except you and a handful of guys know. Oh, that's Morricone. He's pissing on Morricone's legacy. What does it matter? It exists out there. What if somebody takes Morricone and then does like dance beats over it or does some kind of trance music over it? And it sounds killer. Yeah, is that... Morricone didn't make it for that purpose, but hey, it's out there, man.
Well, I get that, but I think it's more about... To me, it's a laziness with it. Now, in Pulp Fiction, it works. In Pulp Fiction, it works like a charm. And that, to me, I don't think he's ever going to make a movie as good as Pulp Fiction. It's one of my favorite films.
Django Unchained is pretty good.
Nothing compares...
No, it's not as good as Pulp Fiction, but it has its moments.
But I mean, what he did with the music there is, you know, used a, you know, a surf tune over the opening credits.
Yeah.
Which is a completely disparate, you know.
Yeah, but you're thinking in terms of this is a surf song. But the average, I mean, there's a couple things at play here. The average movie viewer is not, they're not tripping it the same way you are. They're not going on the same journey you are as a... You know, the 10% of his audience who are movie geeks or fans or fanboy, whatever we are, mm-hmm. who are kind of knowledgeable about this stuff or who know when what movie he's paying homage or ripping off or whatever you want to call it. When you're putting a movie out into general release, you've done 10% is not, you know, it's nice, but I want the 90% of people who don't even know that this is from Ironside TV show, and you know, like, who don't know Morricone, who would know it, you know, if you gave him $1 million, they wouldn't know it.
Mm.
So, you know, we can criticize him because we're kind of on his level in a sense as fans, where we've all drank from the same, you know, fruit punch bowl.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like it's easy to say that. Oh, he's lazy. I mean, he's not lazy. The guy has the resources to have any score he wants in a movie. So how is that lazy?
It's lazy when he takes a theme from another movie and uses that as his theme. To me, that's laziness because, you know, if he takes a song that's from a pop song, let's say Pulp Fiction, the Neil Diamond tune. Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon.
Yeah.
Wasn't a big hit. Nobody really knew what it was. And he gets Urge Overkill to cover it.
Yeah.
But it still sounds very much like the Diamond. That's a perfect placement of a song because it just...
Neil wouldn't...
is that the reason?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was...
He wouldn't let him use.
He wouldn't let him use it, or it's too expensive, or whatever.
But whatever,
maybe
to me,
because there was drug use in the movie. I don't know the story, but I'm remembering reading that he couldn't get the rights for some reason.
Okay, well, that makes sense. But to me, that's great. It's a great use of a song because it doesn't matter to anybody who's watching the movie that you don't have to know it's Neil Diamond. You don't have to know anything about it. It's just.
But what
it
if
fits.
It was the Neil Diamond?
It just
song?
Fits.
Who cares?
No, it's fine.
Oh,
that's
okay.
What I'm saying is when you take.
Something that belongs
Jack,
to another
Jackie
movie.
Jackie Brown, for instance, the opening credits are across 110th Street.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, from the movie.
From the movie. Right.
Great
so
song.
It is a fantastic song.
Great
but
ending.
It's already the theme to a song.
To a movie.
To a movie, excuse me.
Right, but he's think of it as he's talking to you. You know what I mean? He's turning you on to that. So if you dig a little deeper, you find that movie, which is one of his favorites, I'm sure, and then you go watch that movie where you normally wouldn't have watched a movie from 1970, you know, you had no interest in it. So I think it's kind of it's how you approach it. I mean, if you approach it as if you're going to approach it as the guy's a thief and he's not original or he's lazy, then yeah, you could say that about those things.
I wouldn't call him a thief about that. I mean, I think
other people have. Other
certainly,
people have.
Certainly.
And yeah,
pretty
sure.
Upfront about what he steals, and that's
yeah,
okay.
I think
with the exception of Reservoir Dogs, which he never came clean
on. He never came clean on that. Yeah.
Everything else, you know, he's pretty upfront about, and that's, I got no problem with that. I love his style. I actually do. I'm a big Tarantino fan.
Yeah, if you're going to steal, yeah, I mean, look, I think Reservoir Dogs is an exception. I mean, if you're going to steal a plot of a movie, you need to, you know, pay somebody royalties or something. I mean, that was probably, a big mistake. But, other than that, I don't see, he hasn't done anything like that since.
Well, Pulp Fiction, actually. In fact, the scene...
A scene, right. A scene
is lifted completely. The hypo needle thing is lifted directly from a Scorsese documentary that he made.
Right, American but he's War. Open about that.
No, I don't think so.
No?
I've never read anything where he's.
Well, everyone knew
that,
but so everyone knew that who saw this obscure movie that was never released.
But it's a Scorsese movie, and it is available. I mean,
right,
you know, it's. And it's stolen.
Right, but it's not,
I mean,
it's not on TV like Goodfellas.
No, but it's not an homage. It's not. I mean, there's homage. There's winking. There's. I mean, Kill Bill. That is nothing but. And I love the Kill Bill movies because of that. It's almost like a game for. And again,
a trivia game.
It is
for nerds,
right?
Yeah.
And you don't have to be like us to enjoy the movie.
You're right. That's what I like
level.
About it.
Right.
Yeah. So what?
It's fine. But
you think it's insincere that he would gain any kind of. Recognition or awards when you're saying, like, okay, let's say he wins an Oscar for screenplay and, you know, he goes up there. Now, the people who voted on this might not know that he took all this stuff from better movies or other movies or worse movies or whatever, and it's kind of a little bit of a cheat. And then we're sitting here like, we caught you, but we're powerless over this man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, I mean, I enjoy his movies.
I think there's a bitterness. I think, you know, kind of when he does that, you're like, oh my God, I know what that is, and you feel like part of something, but yet you're not. You see what I mean? You're like, I know what that's from. I know what that is. You know, but everybody else in the theater, maybe three or four of them know, but that's it. You're in a very small minority.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making films. You know, make no mistake, this guy's making films for the mainstream. And they want to make money.
Yeah.
You know, this is not about these little art house projects. There's money behind these movies, and they're up for Academy Awards.
Yeah, well, I think he's gotten to the point where he's a name. I mean, there are very few director names who can open a movie. And I think people go to see Django. They didn't go see Jamie Foxx. No offense to Jamie Foxx, but he doesn't open movies.
It didn't hurt that he was in it. Yeah.
But I'm saying people went to see that because it's a Tarantino film. That was opening weekend.
Right.
So,
the same way people go to see a Rodriguez film, you know, well, I guess it depends on the Rodriguez film, like Machete. There's a movie with, you know, that opened on its director for the most part. Well, I mean, Danny Trejo maybe, but everybody knows Danny Trejo. Mm-hmm. But can he open a movie? Well, he did. He's got another one coming.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting conversation. I think what it comes down to is my review of Man with the Iron Fist is A for effort, C for delivery. Maybe even a D in the acting department.
And what's the music like? Did RZA do all the music, or do they use...
There's a couple little... Todd, do you remember? There's a couple little moments where there are some cues. There's some Shaw Brothers cues
Which
and things
great.
Like that.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that stuff I love. I don't mind the... You know, I felt pulled out of it a couple of times with some of the music, but I don't mind people doing that, throwing... I think it's... I like to see the kind of, you know... It's kind of like, you know, seeing a Western with a heavy metal soundtrack or something. I don't know. I kind of like the messing around. Once you've seen so much stuff, you know, and I think that's why Tarantino appeals to me, is because once you've seen all these movies and bought into it, and you've seen every spaghetti Western, you know, and even the worst ones, everything you can get your hands on, and to watch Django Unchained, it's kind of cool to watch somebody work in that tradition, but yet completely screw with it.
Mm-hmm. But see, I think with Django, what I would have done, or what I think Tarantino could have done easily, is taken the soundtrack that he had as a temp track and thrown it over to Morricone and said, "Please, you know, write me something like that." All right,
mm-hmm.
Right. He's the maestro. I mean, the guy's not getting any younger. Throw him a bone, you know. Let him do a soundtrack.
Man, well, I tell you what. I want something that reminds me of Fulci for my film. I want something. So I went to the source. I contacted Fabio Frizzi. Now he's doing music for the movie. You know, that's awesome. What you do.
That's awesome. Exactly.
Well, of course you could do that. He could have done that. He could have afforded that. He could have afforded Morricone. But he didn't want to. See what I'm saying? When you make your movie homage to Fulci, then you do that. You hire Fabio. When you make your Western, Mr. Reed,
yes.
Which will probably be one of these Asian,
it'll be Eastern.
You know, it'll be one of those Eastern Westerns where it's like, you know, Mifune versus Charles Bronson, you know, like that, you know, not, what's that one with Shanghai Joe with Klaus Kinski, right? Was that the one?
I don't remember that one.
Oh, you guys.
Sorry, I believe you, but I don't remember that.
I forget. There were a couple of these kind of Western meets Eastern karate and the old west things, you know, kind of like kung fu with David Carradine.
Well, all I can think of is the Jackie Chan Owen Wilson thing.
Shanghai Nights. Right?
Shanghai Nights.
I missed that one.
Yeah, but yeah. that was kind of an homage to that type of thing. Right?
I guess I didn't see it.
I
missed that one.
Well, there's still time.
There's still time. I'm going to see that on a double bill with I Spy with Eddie Murphy and Owen Wilson. It's going to be an Owen Wilson
yeah.
marathon. What happened to that guy? Couldn't get rid of him, and now...
Well, we almost got rid of him. He committed...
Oh,
he attempted suicide.
Yeah, right. So he's kind of...
He's back. No, he's back. He's doing
back?
Movies. He's back.
Is he?
In,
direct-to-video?
He hasn't opened
a picture in a long time.
No, he was in one of the Ben Stiller bombs, I think.
Okay. Which
but
one?
Prominent. Yeah, that's why. Yeah. I don't know. One of the...
Yeah, it looks like they put the kibosh on him a little bit, too. And, and that other guy, the knocked-up guy, who's that one?
Oh, Vince Vaughn, yeah.
No, he's good. I like him.
Seth Rogen,
yeah, they put the kibosh on him a little bit too. You know, yeah. It's like a little bit too much. They let you go, and then too many Green Hornets, and you gotta go back in the cave for a little while.
Yeah,
come back and do an art film in about 3 or 4 years. You know, we'll put you out on a, you know, little tiny film where you're like a recovering alcoholic or
ensemble.
You know, yeah, you're like the child molester who gets out of jail, but you have redemption. Yeah. Little art film.
Parker Posey's husband.
Yeah, you work at scale. You know, yeah. That's how they're going to do
That's how they do it. Yeah. Val Kilmer had to do that.
Kilmer had to do it. Kevin Bacon had to do it. Like, you know, Nicolas Cage is due, overdue for
and
that.
And they pretend that it was their choice. It's like, oh, no, I wanted to step back from the spotlight.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
about a minute, gentlemen.
Oh, it's already over. We just got into Nick Cage, who actually, you know, did the hit and then went into the mercs of B-movie hell.
Yeah, and has 1 foot in each.
Ah, love him.
He's crazy.
Yeah, he's great.
It's fantastic. I think
there's no one to compare him to.
History will show that he had a fantastic career, I think, once the dust has settled.
Brilliant career.
Yeah.
Brilliant. One of the best.
Can I throw in a tease here?
I'm not gonna.
Next week on our show.
Don't do it. Don't be teasing.
Next week.
Maybe.
Maybe. Tentatively, we're going to have a Walking Dead cast member on our show, right here on our show. Walking Dead, 2 weeks left till the finale, right?
The Asian kid?
I'm not going to say who.
Okay.
You have to tune in.
Don't promise something you can't deliver.
Hey, tune in. I'm promising.
Tune in next week.
Next week.
Same time.
Same channel. Right?
Same bat channel. Is that how you say it? All right. This has been the Movies Hate You Show, the Wild Eye Releasing Radio Hour.
Woo-hoo.
Get us at movieshateyou@gmail.com. And
Facebook. We're on Facebook.
We're on Facebook. Are
movies,
we?
Aren't we? We will be.
Well, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday and I got myself undressed. Well, I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine. Will you meet me in the middle? Will you meet me in the air? Will you love me just a little? Just enough to show you care? Well, I tried to fake it, don't mind saying, but just can't make it. Well, I keep on thinking about you, sister, golden hair surprise. And I just can't live without you, can't you see it in my eyes? Poor correspondent, I've been too hard to find, but it doesn't mean you ain't been on my mind. Will you meet me in the middle? Will you meet me in the air? Will you love me just a little, just enough to show you care? Well, I tried to fake it, I don't mind saying, I just can't make it. Just can't make it.
Just can't make it.